Welcome to the Radical Abundance Podcast, where we celebrate God's radical abundance in all things.
Don't forget to hit like and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode.
Welcome to Radical Abundance. I'm your host, Teresa Jansen, and today we're going to mix things up a little bit. We're going to start the year off with just a conversation style interview between Dan and I. This is my husband, Dan Jansen. If you haven't met him before, welcome to Radical Abundance. Radical Abundance is actually the ministry of us together, but he often isn't on the podcast. So very excited to start the year off with the two of us together. Now, the whole month of January, we are talking about God's radical abundance of grace. Now, this was my idea because in January, people tend to give themselves a grace or a do-over for the last year, all the things they want to leave behind, and give themselves a lot of grace and move forward with a new positive outlook. So I wanted to start out the year talking about grace, and it caused me really to start thinking about what we do in South Sudan and how grace intersects with the humanitarian world and the work of relief organizations. Now, to be fair, it's not a direct correlation, but this is what has been happening in my mind. So I thought we would just chat about that today. And I looked up the definition of grace, and from a Christian context, grace is usually defined as unmerited favor. And that's what God gives to us as sinners, is his unmerited favor, his grace, that he gives us salvation, which we don't deserve. It's nothing we deserve. We get it because he's given it to us, and it's not something that can be demanded. But when we talk about the humanitarian world and the development world, a lot of times we talk about rights as opposed to grace. And those are two very different things, aren't they?
Well, sure. Rights is something that we're going to demand in most contexts. And grace is something that is given to us we don't deserve. And you mentioned that. But it seems the humanitarian focus has been almost exclusively moved from originally the needs-based system to a rights-based system, and approaching things from a rights-based system has some problematic elements to it. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit. There's a lot of things that are good about rights. We have the Bill of Rights in our Constitution, and there is much good that comes from that. But in the context of a worldview that sees a basis for rights being the most important aspect, and we forget about the idea of maximizing our blessing to others or maximizing our strategic ability to serve one another, to encourage others in developing their gifts and abilities and talents and their education. We really can go down the wrong track with just exclusive focus on rights. And I think we need to talk about that a little bit.
I think you're right. One of the things, as I was thinking about the relationship between grace and rights, which again was just totally in my own mind, no one else is comparing the two that I'm aware of. The one thing I thought we can say about both grace and rights is that they're both a result of the fact that we live in a fallen, sinful world. If it wasn't for the fact that we live in a fallen, sinful world, we wouldn't need grace. We wouldn't need God's unmerited favor. And we also wouldn't need rights, because rights are kind of this human construct that we developed to treat each other the way we should be treating each other. And I tried to find a definition for what is human rights. And what I learned is that no one can really agree what are our rights? Now, there are some that people are pretty sure about, and they've even written the Declaration of Human Rights, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights has been written, and it talks about a lot of things. But those things that are talked about in the Declaration of Human Rights certainly are not really universal. People aren't experiencing all of those things. Like, for example, it says that you can't be arrested without knowing why you're being arrested. Well, all over the world, people are arrested every day without knowing why. And is that the right thing? Of course it's not right. But that's why people have tried to develop this idea of human rights, was to make us behave the way we ought to be behaving if we were in good relationship with one another.
It's an accountability system, but the accountability system must be predicated on the basis of a correct worldview. And without a correct worldview, anybody's rights can usurp someone else's rights. And that is where we get into real problems here. If we consider what was happening in the book of Judges, it says that there was no king of Israel, but everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And there are two different ways to look at that, but I think the way that we really want to consider that, that fits the context of what's been written in the Bible, the one that I think the author's actually intended to mean, is that there's a lot of problems when everybody is doing what is right in their own eyes. And if you look in other passages in the Bible, it talks about not doing what you think is right, but actually what we do is seek to follow Jesus' example. We seek to honor God. We seek to put the fellow human being first, and to yield our rights to God, and to seek to be a maximizing the blessing to others. These are the things that I think bring us together and bring us into a Christian worldview where we can maximally focus on blessing one another and serving one another, and recognizing that we're blessed abundantly by God with all kinds of natural resources, human resources that are around us, leadership resources, justice resources. Those things are all originally coming from God, and we recognize that we're just stewards of these things. Then we'll maximally bless others.
So in that passage in Judges, when it talks about there was no king in Israel, so everyone did what was right in their own eyes, that tells us that one of the roles of government should be to establish a rule of law and a way that is so that people know what is right and what is wrong. And that's actually one of the things I read when I was reading about the definition of rights and human rights, is that it is a way of people even knowing what is morality, mm-hmm. what is the moral thing. And so it's very hard to define unless you have some baseline for truth. There has to be a plumb line somewhere. For us as Christians, that's the Bible. But if you don't have that as your framework, then you're trying to look at some other context as to which you can establish morality and then therefore rules and rule of law. Without that, it's very difficult to say.
There's no compass.
Right. There's no compass to guide us in the right direction, to guide people in the right direction. And I think that's one of the big challenges in developing countries that haven't had an opportunity or haven't taken the opportunity to develop rule of law. But then on the other side, you can have laws. And if those laws aren't enforced, then enforced fairly and equally, then you have the same challenge.
Yes, we have today, we have a movement toward postmodernism and relativism. These are not good movements because they undermine any principles or moral compass upon which rights should be based. So then anybody can demand their right and it becomes a selfish free-for-all. This is what we need to avoid. And I don't think the secular systems and the humanitarian systems that are rights-based are really capable of avoiding those kinds of selfish ambition problems or prideful problems. Look at Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. They were tempted to usurp their own rights to define what is good and what is evil. And this is the basis of the problem that we are experienced, and the basis of our sin nature is to say that we can shake our fist at God and we can say we get to define what's right and what's mm-hmm. wrong. And it just leads to human pride, and it leads to selfish ambition, and it also leads to a prevailing situation of fear and of shame and all these things that come into a culture when it's deviated from the focus on yielding our rights to God and seeking to serve one another and be a blessing to one another.
I think that subconsciously, even not even intentionally, but subconsciously, if I'm trying to determine what is right, I'm naturally going to take my own interests into consideration. I remember when I was a little girl, my mom had a rule that if we were splitting something, one person split and the other one got to pick which piece they wanted, right? And so then you try to be extra fair if you're the one who's splitting so that the other person has two really good choices. Boy, if we could do that with everything, where one person makes the rules, but the other person gets to determine, you know, how that goes, who gets which part, that would be great. But unfortunately, life is not as simple as splitting the last piece of chocolate cake.
And even in a democratic situation where we have democracy, we don't necessarily find a type of fairness either, because say if the majority wants the resources of the minority who has worked much harder for them, then you have a situation where even a democracy really doesn't work very well due to the selfish ambition of the majority. And so these types of situations, even if you have a situation where you're saying we have a right to education, or we have a right not to be poor, or we have a right to housing, these things don't necessarily capacitate everyone to fulfill that right, because the person who has the most power or authority or is able to assert their might makes right situation and usurp their power over someone else, or their corruption or their bribery, they might end up with accumulating more unfairly and say that they're justified in that because they were able to do that. And so that's a situation where this rights-based system doesn't really work. It breaks down, because when we had the Constitution, which says people have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it probably comes pretty close to the types of limitations that we should say that people have a right to, because when we start extending it beyond that, then we start to create opportunities for people to usurp their right to take something from somebody else that is not fair or not justified.
Yeah. Well, when I think about this whole idea of a rights-based approach to humanitarian development, and that's where the context where you and I work all mm-hmm. the time, mm-hmm. I, again, did some research on this, and it was in the 90s, I think around 97, when the UN switched from a needs-based approach to a rights-based approach. And so prior to that, they would assess what are human needs, what are the needs that people have, and then try to deliver those needs. And the idea was, if you give people what they need, then they'll develop. And then they switched to a rights-based approach. And supposedly the rights-based approach involves a balance between building the capacity of the duty bearer, which in most instances is the government that should be providing and protecting and giving people the rights in their society. So building the capacity of the duty bearer and then informing and encouraging the rights holder to know their rights and to ask for their rights to be delivered to them. But it doesn't quite work out that way in the real world.
Well, that's because when you have a governance system that is based on or predicated on people taking what position or what power they can, it can not be nearly as effective as, say, if our rights are determined when we do things voluntarily, because forcing people to do things by the government, people try to get away with as much as possible. But when it's drawn out, say, from the church, where the church is encouraging people to do things voluntarily, then people will seek the blessing and the good of others. And I think this whole system of changing over to the government being the duty bearer to provide all of these things really has broken down our society. It's really undermined the progress that we could make, because now people are not voluntarily giving something, but people are demanding that they feel they are entitled. And this is what we produced in these situations where we focused on rights spaces. We've produced an entitlement system, a system that says you're entitled to these rights, and then encouraging that leads to envy, where people try to suppress someone else because they're jealous, or they try to make someone else's situation worse, or that it leads to looting, it leads to corruption, because anything can be justified. Once you start feeling entitled, then anything is justified after that. And with the tribal environments where people are already conditioned that it's right to take something from another tribe also leads to the slippery slope and sears our conscience. And so this conscience searing in all these contexts is inevitably leads to a lot of problems in society.
And it depends so much on the culture in which you're working too, because in some cultures, people do think that like a property should be distributed a little bit more evenly, or not just property as in land, but wealth and goods and assets. If one person has something more than than another person has, they should be sharing what they have. That's a cultural perspective. And so if my perspective is that my right is to have what you have, then you need to give that to me. And if I begin to feel entitled, then it can actually really break down to lawlessness even.
Yeah, and you'll shame me because I'm not giving it to you. And then nobody wants to get ahead because everybody fears being shamed and having to give up all the extra work they put into something. So it suppresses any progress that can be made. And then you also have a situation where if the tax burden is too high in certain societies, nobody wants to really work extra hard because it's going to be taken away a tax. It's going to be taken away in other ways. And so when you start moving away from voluntarily giving things to other people and start enforcing these transfers where someone who has earned it to someone who hasn't earned it, then I think we're becoming entering into a problematic area where society really doesn't progress very, very well.
And I think we have to go back to, again, trying to determine what are those rights that people are truly entitled to. Things like life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. That's always been a bit confusing as to, well, how do we really give someone the right to pursue happiness? Because that can open some big can of worms too. But what I have seen happen in the real context in our environment is that people know they have rights, but they don't know exactly what those rights are. But they do know they have needs. And that's this intersection between the needs-based approach and the rights-based approach. And so I know I don't have enough food for my family, per se. And I know I have rights. And so I have a right to have food because that's what I need. And so then people are really confused and they begin demanding things that aren't the rights. And then also the confusion comes in as to whose responsibility is it to fulfill my rights. And so if I'm both confused about the rights I should be having and whose responsibility it is to fulfill my rights, and then I now feel empowered to demand my rights, it can just turn into a big mess.
But when we take a step back here, let's define what is good for society. Human flourishing should be the standard. We often see this standard being altered from other worldviews that undermine human flourishing. You know, extreme environmentalism, where the creatures are put as it's their right to be dominant in the world, or the pristine nature of the land. All these things, anything can undermine the aspect of human flourishing and the pursuit of happiness, or the pursuit of hope and peace and prosperity and unity in society. All these things can be undermined when there's selfish ambition, or when there's shame-based systems, or where there's a big man system where the big man can do no wrong. We see this commonly in Africa, and there's no accountability there. So we want that accountability. We want advocacy. We want to minimize selfish ambition and shame and fear. This is why we're promoting the Christian worldview.
Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing I think about when I think about rights in the Bible, this is a totally different path. Mm-hmm. I think about, I think it's in John 1:12, and it says, and to those who received him, he gave the right to be sons of God or children of God. Mm-hmm. And that's the right that, of course, we want to aspire towards. And when we see ourselves as children of God, then we see each other equally, which mm-hmm. is what rights are all about, mm-hmm. is that regardless of where you were born and what you look like and who you are, you have you are equal to me. Mm-hmm. We each mm-hmm. have value. So if we're all children of God, then we can hopefully get more into a family, a healthy mm-hmm. family situation, instead of in this idea of trying to demand what I think I should have from whomever I think should be giving it to me.
And that brings me to a real consideration of a pivotal point in history. We think of Jesus coming as a pivotal point in history, but I'm also thinking of another pivotal point in history where this whole system came upon a tremendously good foundation for modern governance, and that was the Magna Carta, when it was recognized that the king really didn't have a right to do whatever he wanted to do. And these merchant systems, where they had accumulated some wealth and they were starting to pay attention to advocacy and accountability, they went to the king and they held him accountable, and they said, you don't have a right to do whatever you want. Your rights come from God. And so we must ordain that our rights come from God, and that God is really owner of everything, and we're just temporary stewards. And once that principle is permeated into society and becomes part of our worldview, then it opens the door for peace and human flourishing and tranquility and in unity in society, where we're seeking to bless one another. And there's a opportunity for accountability and advocacy. And that comes from recognizing God as owner, and we're temporary stewards, and we yield our rights to God, and everybody must be accountable to do what is right.
You know, Dan, that reminds me that the other side of rights that we forget to talk about, and I think is key in order to having a just society, is that for all of the rights we have, there are also responsibilities.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And if we can both receive our rights and give each other rights, but then fulfill the responsibilities that come from having those rights, then we can have a fair and just society. And that even is true of having the right to be called children of God. When we have the right to be called children of God, we have the responsibility of being children of the Most High God.
And we're heirs of salvation,
exactly,
too.
And then sharing that with other people. It gets exciting.
And the fulfillment of the Great Commission comes from the sweet spot between recognizing that our responsibility is to love God with all of our heart, with all of our soul, with all of our mind, and to love our neighbor as ourself. And then that is fulfilled when we go out and we teach others to do and follow the example of Jesus, everything that Jesus commanded us and what we learn from God's word, and that serves as our guide. Then this system of proper accountability and human flourishing and rights derived from the yielding ourselves to God, that is where the proper basis and foundation is.
And we've come all the way full circle back to that idea of grace. And that's, again, what all of January is about, is God's radical abundance of grace. And do you know, when I was researching about grace, I came upon a terminology that is actually quite common among all religions, but I think is unique also to Christianity, and they call it divine grace. Now, divine grace isn't grace from the divine. That's what grace actually is. But divine grace is the human response to God's grace on us that allows us then to bestow that grace to other people. And they call it divine because it almost transcends our selfish human nature where we want to demand our rights. But if instead I can extend grace to others out of the gratitude that comes from having received grace from God.
And we can extend it to others too, because when we acknowledge our own sin and our own need for repentance and accountability to God, we can, that's really the basis for grace.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think this has been a fun conversation for me to have with you, especially because as a husband and wife, we really experience that. And anyone out there who's married, you know, when you live with someone, you need to receive some grace and then also extend some grace. And I know you often, you'll say to me, well, that's what keeps me humble. And that's what allows me to extend grace to others. And so I have to remind myself that sometimes too, that, wow, I definitely have received plenty of grace from God, but also from you. Thank you.
And likewise.
Right. So then we can extend it to one another, but then we can extend it to other people too. And you know, the thing that gets me, because we are Christians and we have the right to be called sons of God, we have the responsibility of this knowledge that other people may not have. And so even when other people are not responding with grace, as a Christian, it's our responsibility to still extend grace.
Well, one of the things that keeps us working in South Sudan in the midst of all of this difficulty and turmoil in the country is the fact that we really need to be in places where, be working in places that are the most difficult, because they're the places that are in need of the most grace. and the extension of God's love, they need to love the most.
You've said that before, you know, when I've had a rough day and I've encountered something, you'll say, that's why we're here. That's exactly it.
And well, that keeps us going in South Sudan, is knowing that these difficulties we experience, particularly with other people, are the very reason why we're there, because we're planting a seed of grace and working the Great Commission and extending love and compassion to places where there's not as much love and compassion, there's not as much Christian worldview in place. And that's where we need to go. And these are the most needy places.
Well, this has been a great time. It's been a lot of fun talking about God's radical abundance of grace, kicking off 2022. Mm-hmm. I think we all need a little bit of grace after the last couple of years that we've had. It's been some challenge, but those challenges are exactly why we're here. It gives us purpose and gives us something to work towards and work together towards. Mm-hmm. So, Happy New Year, and I wish you God's radical abundance in your life.